Hello and welcome to the Swim Ireland podcast's coaching series, getting to the nitty-gritty of what it takes to coach the finest aquatic stars in Ireland in an Olympic and Paralympic year. I'm your host, Joanne Murphy, and today I'll be chatting with Peter Hill. Peter is the head coach of Larne Swimming Club with two of Ireland's key athletes and Olympic hopefuls, Danielle Hill, Ireland's fastest ever female swimmer, and Conor Ferguson under his care. Peter, you're very welcome to the podcast today. How are you?
Not too bad, Joanne. I just want to point out that Danielle Hill is not a relation. Just everybody asks. She's not.
That was going to be one of my questions.
A happy coincidence.
Well, Peter, thanks again for your time today, for joining us for this podcast series. So to get us started, I'd love if you could give us a brief background in the sport and coaching, when it started and how you got to be the head coach of Larne Swimming Club.
My parents don't swim. They still can't swim. And they took me to learn to swim when I was five. And I sat on the edge, my feet in the water for about 5 weeks, didn't get wet. Eventually joined a swimming club and was never really very good, to be honest. So when I turned 16, I did a teaching course and started teaching some of the kids instead and enjoyed it. An opportunity came up when I was 18 to move from the club I was in to New Northern City of Belfast and do a coaching course with Paul Dennis. And I kind of just went from there. That I worked for the junior squads for a while with Pierce McGuigan as the head coach. And then I think it was about 2003, Pierce left to move on to greener pastures. And I got the opportunity to step up to be the head coach of City of Belfast Swimming Club. Through more by luck than judgment, we had a reasonable run. We had swimmers went to World Championships, European Championships, and one swimmer qualified for Olympics in 2008. Like I say, off the back of a lot of work by Pierce. And then in 2013, an opportunity to do something just a little bit different, to take on a different project in Larne. And presented itself. It was never something that really had crossed my mind to move. I was kind of happy and settled and but there were a couple of talented kids in Larne, and the opportunity to move just was too good to turn down. So I've been there now 7 years, and yeah, the rest is sort of history. Trying to do the best job I can, I guess.
I can see from your face, and of course we're doing this call over Zoom, so I can see from your face, the smile on your face when you're talking about the coaching, about the qualifications, and about just swimming generally. You can just feel the passion coming from you.
I'm very fortunate that I can do something that I enjoy. My business, I'm not a professional coach. I have a swim school where I teach kids to swim. Obviously it's shut at the moment, so I don't get to do that now. But yeah, I'm very, very lucky that I get to do something that I really enjoy. I think it's really important that when the alarm goes off at 4:30 in the morning, every morning, if you don't enjoy it, then it's really turns into a slog very, very quickly. So yeah, I'm very lucky.
And does your alarm still go off at 4:30 every morning, even though the swim school is closed?
No, the little boy, Ezra, goes off at 4:30 every morning. So it's been a good training for baby number two, who doesn't sleep as well as baby number one.
So Peter, we know that the Olympic trials are coming up. First and foremost, how is training going with your swimmers?
Yeah, it's going as well as can be expected. I mean, it's very odd. We've spent the last lot of years trying to build up sort of a team ethos. You know, we normally swim in a group of 15 to 20, and now we've got a group of five. So it's a very different dynamic. But having said that, we're very lucky that we actually get to swim. So that's the positive. So there's a lot of people who are going to be listening to this who aren't in the water at all. In terms of training with Danielle, Connor, and the other guys that are hopefully, fingers crossed, this weekend going to get times to qualify for trials as well. It's going really well. We're 5 weeks out. They're tired. They're shattered. I have a philosophy where we don't back off. We don't rest until we want to rest for trials. So they've been going at it since September. And Danielle said to me this morning, she's just about ready to rest. So yeah, they're shattered. But I think we have to take the positives out of this situation. It's given us an opportunity to work more closely with, like I said, there's five of them. So work more closely with those five and be just a little bit more specific than we could be in a slightly bigger group.
When you say be a slightly more specific, can you tell us anything around the specifics of how you've maybe adapted training due to COVID-19, or how has it impacted what you're doing specifically?
The protocols around getting in and out of the centres is weird for everybody. You know, we've got to sign in every morning. So that sort of stuff that's just the administration side is probably the biggest change. I really believe that what we do is more important than where we do it. So I've tried to keep things the same. So last year we had a really good September to December. Things were going really well. So we just kind of tried to mirror the same plan, irrespective of where our venue is. So at the moment we're in Bangor. It's a lovely facility. There's 10 lanes. It's long course. It's brilliant. It's like a palace compared to where we're used to. We normally train on a 5-lane 25-meter school pool, but we try to just do the same stuff. The venue, it's nice to look at, but when it comes right down to it, water is water, and you've got to swim up and down them. So we've tried to keep the actual training as normal as possible without too much interference from COVID. I mean, the biggest difference for my guys is that, like I said, normally they swim with three in each lane, 25-meter lanes, and now they've almost got a lane to themselves. So they're enjoying the space, but they're definitely missing the camaraderie and the you know, the encouragement and the enthusiasm from having a group around them.
And how important has it been to keep the routine going for them, to keep a routine every day for them in terms of the same waking time, the training sessions and all that, in terms of keeping consistency in their day?
I think consistency is key to everything. We try to avoid taking days off where possible because, and we definitely don't take weeks off. I don't think anybody in swimming takes weeks off, but we try to, in our normal training, we would swim 7 days a week and we would tailor the week around having some easier sessions in that week to allow them to swim every day. At the moment, we're kind of dictated to by what is available. So it's a little bit different. We still have 8 sessions a week, but we have a Sunday off. So adapting to having that Sunday off has taken a little bit of time, but I think that they've settled into it, not too bad. The knock-on effect of having a Sunday off means that they've got 2 double days. On Mondays and Thursdays, they've got doubles. And when you add the gym sessions in Monday, Wednesday, Friday, it just means that there's a tough little run from Wednesday afternoon to Friday afternoon where they've got 6 sessions in a 48-hour period. So that took a little bit of time to get used to. But the counterbalance that is that when they finish their session on Saturday at 10 o'clock, they're not back until 8 o'clock on Monday. They've enjoyed that. I'm not looking forward to having to break news to them next year that they're back to 7 days a week. So I'm not sure they're going to enjoy that.
And what does a typical week look like in terms of training, in terms of, say, the hours in the pool or the hours in the gym? Or how does it break down in maybe percentage-wise between dry land and in-water activity?
Listen, I don't kill them in terms of volume. So we're in the water 8 sessions a week, and the sessions are 2 hours long. But the way we are at the moment, that 2 hours includes their pre-pool. So it's really an hour and 45 in the water by the time we get into the venue, go through their prep stuff before they get in the pool. So it's really an hour and 45, 8 sessions a week. We tend to swim somewhere between 4.5 and 5.5K per session. And like I said, the content of the sessions varies. At the moment, we have a little run of 3 sessions that we try to replicate the 3 rounds of competition, heat, semis and finals. They don't really enjoy that because it's 3 sessions in a row that are quite intense. But I think it'll serve a good purpose later down the line when they have to do that, hopefully in the summer. The gym sessions, Connor and Danielle, their gym, it's in 2 different venues. So Danielle works in Sinai. Connor works with CrossFit Castrum. But they both go on the same day. So they go Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And the gym sessions, depending on the stage of the season they're in, it's anywhere between an hour and an hour and a half in the gym, those 3 sessions. We have a good relationship with Steve and Ryan, the 2 SNC coaches, and they work really closely with me to make sure that the work that they do in the gym complements what we do in the pool. So the pool work always comes first, and then the gym complements what we do. There's no point in me giving them an easier, relaxed week if they're going to go to the gym and get absolutely trounced. Yeah, that's kind of the way we break it down in terms of across a week. Every week's the same. I know that there are some coaches that vary the number of sessions in each week. My brain can't work that out. I'm not the sharpest tool in the box. So we just try to do the same thing in terms of our session count every week.
And how important is it that you collaborate with your S&C coaches to make sure that you're not absolutely killing them in the pool and then they're not absolutely killing them in the gym?
The communication is vital. I am in so many WhatsApp groups with different service providers. So we've got the physio, the nutrition, and myself are all in the WhatsApp groups. And it's a weekly communication. What are we doing this week? What's the plan for next week? So that if Ryan or Steve in the gym have something specific that they want to do, that they need to do in the gym, then I tailor the swim program around that so they can get what they need for that specific session, and vice versa. If I have test sets coming up that we want to do, I let them know. To be honest, I let them know probably a month or two in advance so that we can change things well in advance if we have to. And like this weekend, they've got a time trial tomorrow. Connor has had the day off today. He wants the day off before he goes to the race tomorrow. Danielle doesn't. So two different plans, two different athletes, two different WhatsApp groups, and constant buzzing on my phone is the way it goes.
And how do you balance the time between two to ensure that they're both getting the maximum amount of your attention and your expertise so that they can maximize their potential in the water?
So they focus, they're both backstrokers, which makes life a little bit easier. So when it comes to the technical work and drill work, they largely can do that together. Danielle's focus is 100 back and a 50 free. So she is working on a slightly more sprint oriented program than Connor, who's 100 back and the 200 back. So their weeks don't quite marry up. And what we've tried to do is on the weeks where they're doing different things, Danielle will go, maybe she might go hard on Monday afternoon and Connor will do a more relaxed, easy session. And then on Tuesday morning, they'll flip. So the goal is to always be giving them the most attention during their key sets, whether that key set is a technical set or a quality piece of work. It's quite nice that on the days that they both are working on 100 back, it makes life so much easier because they can both go together. But yeah, that's how we kind of divide it up. Normally in our club setup, we would have three groups that run and you just have to mix and match. And obviously, if you've got 15 people in water, everybody gets a little bit of your time. Everybody can't get all of your time all of the time. And it's just kind of that magnified because of the COVID and the Olympics. You know, I mean, it's just the same. We try, like I said, to keep things as normal as possible. There are days that come in, I make sure I talk to them both every day. Because if there's only five people, if you don't talk to one of them, it's really obvious you're not talking to them. So we try to avoid that. And if there's something, if they're on a technical session and I'm working with the other one doing some time stuff, they both know that all they got to do is put their hand up and go, Peter, can you have a look at this for me? Can you come and have a look at what I'm doing here? Is it right? And two-way communication all the time. It's key to all of it.
And then in terms of specific sets or markers, are there particular ones that you can talk to us about?
Anybody who knows me, who's listening to this, knows that I love crunching numbers, right? I'm an Excel geek and I have spreadsheets and I track, if there's a number attached to it, I track it as much as I possibly can. It drives my wife mad because when I'm not at the pool, I'm usually on my laptop figuring out what has happened during the day and what we're doing tomorrow. What we do in relation to that is that we have a lot of little test sets that we run through the season. And my view is that we don't test for the sake of testing. Testing has to tell me something. And I also like it to be part of a training plan. So if I lose a day of training because I've done a test, it really annoys me. You know, I prefer the test to be an integral part of the training. So at the moment, we're working 8 weeks out from trials. We do a little efficiency test and we start 8 weeks out with 850s and it's stroke count and descending times. And we give them a very basic golf score. So we add the time and the stroke count and it gives them a number. And then they have to reduce that number on each 50. And it ends up being quite fast. And then during the week, we do it on a Thursday. So from Friday through to Wednesday, we work on being as efficient as possible for a series of 50s at the end of each warm-up. And then the next week we do the test again. And the idea is to reduce the overall score, increase and improve efficiency in that last 8 week running. I don't know if that's making any, it makes perfect sense in my head. And they get nice little graphs and stuff. And we look for the curve and where the curve changes. And we see a progression as we move towards trials. What then we look at is the capacity work that we've done and the power work that we've done when they rest, coupled up with an efficient stroke, should give them the best opportunity to produce the best performance they can on the day that counts. So that's one that we do every 8 weeks before any major meet. And the first time they do it, it's a little bit tricky. But once they get their idea of what they're doing, they know what's coming and they know what they have to do and they kind of just get on with it. And it's quite interesting because Danielle's been with me for 7 years now. So we've done it for four of those 7 years, twice a year. And even now in the last, we've done 3 weeks this season, and even looking at her progression from week one to week three, there are still improvements being made in her efficiency, even though you would think over 4 years, maybe she doesn't need to do it anymore. Am I, again, thinking, am I going to keep doing this? Then you look at the results and you go, look, there's still improvements being made. There's still ground to be gained here. So we're just going to keep on doing it. It's still valuable. The other set that I enjoy that we do every 5 weeks or so is a set of 1750s that are just max effort. And we reduce the turnover time from 90 seconds on the first one the 30 seconds on the last one. They have to go max effort and they have to make them all. If you miss a turnover time, you just don't get the rest. You got to do 17 and it hurts. No matter how fast you can swim, Danielle is the fastest female in Irish history and the last one still hurts. It's still hard. And again, I love that set because they just can't hide. Anybody who makes the last one, it's because they've hidden somewhere in the middle of the set and they get the rounds of the kitchen because they haven't done the set right. The philosophy, the reason we do that is I have a philosophy where we train hard so that we can race easy. And we want our training intensity to at least match our racing intensity so that when we race, our body knows that's what it feels like when lactate builds up. That's what it feels like when you don't think you can get your arms to ground anymore. And in a race, when that hits, you got to know that's my body knows how to deal with that. So I can get those arms to just go around two more times, get my hand on the wall. And the way I sell it to them is that when you finish the last one, it's done. The pain's over. You can swim down. You can relax. It's only going to last 24 minutes. It's done. They hate it when I say that.
Yeah, you make it sound like so much fun.
I love it.
I'm sure you do. You mentioned efficiency quite a lot, and obviously there's a fitness level required for efficiency to be able to go fast, but obviously technique is hugely important as well, and it's something that's always instilled into athletes from a young age. But is there anything specific that you would do from a technical perspective with Connor and Danielle?
Listen, technique is the foundation on everything we do, and if you haven't got any technique, then you're really just thrashing your arms around. And you're cutting the top off your pyramid. You'll never reach that peak. So we spend a lot of time just working on technique. Like I said, there are three sessions a week where we just drill. I try to post some of the more interesting drills we do on my social media so that people can see them, because sometimes they're interesting. Sometimes it's just because I'm videoing it and I think, what am I going to do with this video after we've done it, finished with a session? My philosophy in all four strokes is real simple. It's we want to get a straight line from our head to our hips. We want to get that line as long on the surface of the water as is humanly possible. But I think it's Bernoulli's law, which says that the length of a vessel in relation to the width of the vessel, it dictates its speed. So if we can't make our athletes narrower, but we can make them longer. So if we can increase the water, the line, the length of the body at the waterline, then we can increase the potential for speed. So we do a lot of work on engaging the core, on activating the shoulders, getting the shoulders down and back, and making sure that everything that we do from that point is directed in as straight a line as possible. So when we do our drills, the focus is on putting our hand in front of our shoulder and pushing it in as straight a line as possible towards our hips so we get the maximum length out of the stroke in as short a time as possible. When very, very simply, and it's probably not 100% accurate, but very simply, I tell the kids when they come in that speed is distance over time. So in terms of swimming, your swimming speed is your distance per stroke over the time it takes for those strokes to happen. So your stroke rate and your stroke count are key. And we spend a lot of time, it's like that golf score stuff. It's the same thing, that efficiency score. It's counting your strokes and then increasing your rate without reducing the distance per stroke. So we do a lot of stuff just on that. And it's very, very slow. It's very, very easy. I'm not I'm not the smartest coach, so I don't invent new drills. We just use very simple ones. So with Connor and Danielle, we do single arm backstroke, we do double arm backstroke, we do lateral kick. We try to make it slightly more interesting by adding a water polo ball so that they have to engage their shoulder a little bit more, engage their core, put them in a slightly more unstable environment so that they have to engage just a little bit more. We've recently started making Danielle do her backstroke drills with a paddle on her head. So when she lies down, the paddle is against the top of her head and she has to keep it there when she swims. So if her head moves at all, the paddle just slides off. So it's about keeping that head in the same position. Again, in backstroke, I don't think you have to have it perfectly straight. There's a little bit of a slouch, it's not too bad, but it can't move. So the paddle just is something a little bit fun, you know, something a bit of crack. Kids do it with a cup on their forehead. So it's just the next evolution of that, really. They've all got little hockey pucks that they swim with on their heads as well. So nothing earth shattering, just with a little twist, just to make it slightly more entertaining for me to watch, if nothing else.
Entertaining for you to watch, but also fun is a huge part of the piece around encouraging kids to get to the pool every week.
Yes, listen, if they don't enjoy what they're doing, they're just not going to keep coming. When they get to Daniel O'Connor's level, the enjoyment, I believe the enjoyment at that level comes from PBing at the end of a hard cycle. I wouldn't say that Daniel and Connor are particularly enjoying training at the moment, but when they're younger, the enjoyment comes from training, you know, seeing your friends doing something a little bit different. So whenever, again, on the backstrokers, we would do things like on their backstroke starts where we call them bum bombs. So they sit in the set position on their backcrawl start and they have to jump as far as they can, landing on their backside. And it's just a bit of crack. You know, we try to encourage them to get height, and if they can do backflips off their backstroke starts and, you know, anything that sends them home with a bit of a smile on their face at the end of a session. With Dee and Connor at the minute, it's who gets to pick the soundtrack for the session. And that keeps them motivated. You know, the first one there gets to connect with a spear.
And have you done anything creative during COVID to keep the younger members or maybe the age group athletes engaged with the club and to keep them in some shape or form at a training level or at to keep their fitness for when we do get to return to sport?
During the first lockdown, it was much, much easier, to be honest. We had stuff on every week where we had Zoom calls every week, and we would have had Danielle and Connor, again, were very, very active with the junior club. Danielle is our club ambassador. They wanted to vote her as club captain. It's just too much responsibility and time taken for that. So she's an ambassador. You know, Connor was working with some of the age group boys and taking core sessions, taking some circuit training, doing, we had another girl did some Pilates with him. I did a little bit of yoga with them, which sometimes went down all right, and trying to keep them active, setting little challenges every week, you know, step challenges for the house and stuff that they keeping them just active. It's been much harder the second time. At the moment, to be honest, the route we've taken is we're just engaging with them, and we're not forcing them to go out and run. We're not forcing them. There's no gyms open, so they can't even do that. So we're just staying in touch, asking how they're doing, making sure that they're okay with starting school again this week. Making sure that they know that when swimming comes back, that their career isn't over. You know, that a break is not the end of the world when you're 16. It's not going to kill you. So yeah, this time around, since we closed down in the middle of October, it's really been just about keeping in touch with them rather than forcing them to go out and be really active. Now, having said that, they have been told that come the middle of this month, when we're in the last hopefully 4 or 6 weeks, they're going to have to start being a little bit more active, and we're going to start doing a little bit more stuff.
And I suppose the other aspect about the club environment as well is about community. And it's about keeping that community engaged and having a positive influence in their lives, even though they're not with you at 3, 4, 5 days a week in the pool on the deck.
6 days a week. Yeah.
Six days a week, even seven. Is there 8 days in the week? Maybe there is.
Yeah, I mean, we like I said, we've spent a long time building a team ethos. So it's team learn. Definitely as they move through the club, they become more engaged and more involved in that team learn thing. Whenever they're a kid, it's just a name on their hat. But as they move through the squads, it becomes more important. I'm really, really proud of the fact that so many of them socialize outside of swimming. You know, not everybody is a world beater, and that's just the way it is. It doesn't matter how good your club is. You're always going to have one or two that are a little bit better than the rest. But without the stars in the pool, the rest of the guys don't have any aspirations. They don't see what you can do in a club environment and in a club situation, and they can watch two guys who came through Larne wanting to go to the Olympics. And if that doesn't inspire kids who are in Larne now, then I don't know what will. But the reverse is also true. And I know that Danielle especially misses her friends who maybe train all year to qualify for the Irish Summer Open. But without them in the pool 7 days a week, almost being a lighthearted relief at times, you know, when I'm screaming and shouting because they're on their 17th 50 and somebody's missed a turnover time and they've got to go, that when they finish and they're lying on the deck of the pool, somebody says something and everybody laughs, and that just lifts the tension a little bit. And you need to have that around you as well. You need to have those guys that are engaged, training 7 days a week, but that keep everybody together and keep you grounded and make you understand that we're in a very fortunate position that we can do something every day that we really enjoy, and we can do it with our friends. It really couldn't be better than us.
And how do you encourage them to deal with the pressure? Like the pressure of performing, the pressure of hitting those numbers, you know, is there particular techniques that you would use or particular mindset tools or something that you would use to support them in that very, very pressurized environment?
What I've done in the past, I've used some mindfulness techniques. One of our other coaches would have done some breathing techniques to help them calm themselves before races. And then it's up to them if they want to take that stuff on board. Some people felt comfortable doing it. Some people just thought it's a lot of hocus pocus and they didn't want to do it at all. What I try to do now is have a situation and an environment in training where failing is absolutely fine, if not actively encouraged. I mean, that set that I talked about, those 1750s, is specifically designed to fail. And when they understand that failing is not the end, failing is a necessary part of the journey. And as long as you've learned something from that failure, and as long as you've learned something from the process that you went through, it doesn't matter. In the grand scheme of things, it's okay, because the next time around, you'll fail again, but you'll fail a little bit better than you failed this time. When it comes to trials, there is going to be a ridiculous amount of pressure, because realistically, we're talking about maybe six people looking for times over 5 days. And in specific races, everybody's going to be watching one lane. So in the women's 100 back, there's not going to be anybody in the building who's not looking at lane four or lane three, whatever that is, you know, and that does bring a lot of pressure. But we don't talk about it, to be honest. We don't talk about the time is 60.3. We don't talk about it. We know that in order for Danielle to go 60.3, she's got to get out in 29.2. We don't talk about it. We know that in order to do that, she's got to get her start right. She's got to go seven kicks on the start. She's got to break out. She's got to hold a stroke rate of 45. When she turns, she's got to come off the wall. She's got to go six kicks off the wall. And she's got to hold a stroke rate of 45. And in the last 15 meters, that stroke rate's got to go up to 48 to get her hand on the wall. And we talk about those things. So it means that whenever she gets out of a race, whether it's trials or whether it's tomorrow, we don't talk about the time. We talk about, right, look, here's what we trained to do. This is what you did. Here's the difference between the two. And here's where we can make those improvements. And I think that what that does is it breaks the race down a little bit from my approach, where I'm not standing looking at my stopwatch going, it's not fast enough. You know, because in their heads, they're going to look at the scoreboard and they're going to go, it's not fast enough. Instead of that, we're able to say, instead of just the negative of you didn't go 59.8, you know, instead of doing that, you've gone 59.9. It's now a senior record and we're disappointed because you didn't go 59.8. That's mad. So instead of that, we go, right, okay, what you've done here is you've gone seven kicks in your turn. You've done a really good job. You've held your stroke rate for 75 meters. You've done a really good job. The last 25, the stroke rate dropped a little bit, and that's the bit we need to work on. It's always about the process. And if you accept the process, and within that, there are going to be failures. So again, if we take Connor, for example, I think he has to go 157.6, I think it is, for the 200 back. Don't talk about it. we know that his rate has to be 43 the whole way through the race. And if he can put together in training a block of 50s, holding that, then it gives him confidence to win the race, to stand up on a block and go, right, okay, I'm going to execute my race to the best of my ability. And the clock, there's nothing I can do about that clock, because it's just going to keep on going until I hit the pad. I can't influence it. I can't change it. I can't slow it down. All I can do is go through the processes. We deal with the fallout afterwards. So fingers crossed, the fallout will be lots of happy faces and maybe a bit of crying and maybe a bit of jumping up and down and a lot of shouting probably from the gallery. And that'll be great. If on the other hand, we're a little bit disappointed, then we'll deal with that in the same way. There'll be a little bit of crying, there'll be a little bit of clapping, there'll be a little bit of noise from the gallery, and then we'll go through the processes. If Connor goes 156, smashes the time, I'm still going to go, right, okay, on your first 50, you held 45 stroke rate. On your last 50, it dropped to 43. That's where we need to make the change. So we just deal with the success and the failure exactly the same. And I want Danielle and Connor to swim for another 8-10 years. They're only 21. You know, the people who are winning the Olympic medals in Danielle's events and in Connor's events are 28, 29 years old. This is the start. And if they qualify and if they go and they only swim the heats, it's just a learning experience. If they go and they make it to a final, it's just a learning experience. And we got to treat it the same and not get carried away, but also not get too down afterwards either. It's a lot easier said than done.
Very much so, a lot easier said than done, I imagine. I want to ask you about the importance of the coach-swimmer relationship in achieving success. It sounds to me like there has to be a huge amount of trust placed in you as their coach, and that the swimmers themselves trust that what you're setting them to do is going to get the best from them on race day.
Listen, I hope she doesn't mind me saying this. Danielle and I have known each other for 7 years. Connor and I have known each other for 7 years, but he went to Ellesmere for his A-levels. So he had a bit of a hiatus in the middle where he wasn't in the program. But with Danielle, Danielle, I didn't see eye to eye when I started, literally, because she wouldn't look at me. So it was frustrating. And there were numerous times where I was like, I don't know what I'm doing wrong here. I have no idea. This wee girl will not engage with me the way I want her to engage with me at all. Over time, getting to know Danielle, I learned that that's just her. It's nothing personal. That's just who she is. So now, I think now that we have possibly one of the best relationships in Irish swimming. I think that we have a relationship that is built on not just knowing each other, but understanding each other, understanding what's the motivation, what does she want, what does Connor want, why do they want it, why do they turn up at training every single day. Why does Danielle support Liverpool? You know, I don't know. Is the answer to that one, but she does. So our relationship is not just about swimming. Our relationship is based on the fact that we understand each other. She knows why I coach. She knows that I coach specifically because I want to win. I know that she swims specifically because she wants to rewrite Irish swimming history. And those two things go together. So we work well together, because we understand each other. And yes, 100% trust has to be earned. The way I deal with Danielle and Connor is different than the way the 14 and 13 year olds get dealt with. So for example, if Danielle comes into me on a Wednesday afternoon and says, Peter, I know you've written this set for me today, but I just can't do it. I'm just not in a place where it's going to be good enough. Then I trust her and I go, okay, no problem. We'll rewrite the set, we'll change it, and we'll move around and we'll get it done some other time. A 14-year-old comes in and says the same thing. I go, yeah, but we're going to do the set anyway. Like, because you haven't earned that trust from me yet. And when you get a little bit older and you're a little bit more mature and we've learned from each other, then that same respect will be given. But it has to be a two-way thing. So I like to think that I respect Danielle as an athlete. I hope she respects me as a coach. I trust her as an athlete. She trusts me as a coach. And that takes, it's taken 7 years. You know, and it's an ongoing process. It's a continuous thing that every single day we learn a little bit more, you know, we learn a little bit more. Sometimes I'll walk on poolside and she'll look at me and go, I'll not speak to him today because he looks a little bit grumpy. And equally, she'll walk on poolside and you can tell from body language, all right, so today I'm maybe not going to push it too much. But that's not something you can pick up in a matter of months. It takes a lot of time. And that's the difficulty whenever you move into a new program. So when I moved into Lorne, I didn't know any of that. You know, I had to learn it.
On a regular year or a regular season, how would you manage your time to ensure that all the athletes are getting what they need in terms of training and support? Because I can imagine it can be super time consuming.
Yeah. It takes a lot of time. Within the squad that I'm responsible directly for, coaching every day, there are 20 athletes, 16 who are really engaged and swim every day, and then another four or five who float in and out, and they're important too, because let's be honest, they're the ones that keep the squad knit together. They're probably the social hubs. So what we do within that group, they've got likes of Danielle and Connor whose focus is trials for whatever the major meet is in the summer. Then you're going to have another tier down whose focus is trials, but their focus is trials just because it's a big meet. And they just want to swim their best swim at that meet. So they work together as a group, right? And within that, when we get closer to trials, like now, 5 weeks out, that group gets more of my attention, right? The group that is focused on the meet that's coming up. We have another group who are equally able, just a little bit younger. And what we do with those guys is every year we go to a meet in Portugal, and we go there in February, and that's their focus meet. Right, Danielle, Connor, those guys, they go there as well, but they go there and they train through. There's no special dispensation for them. This other group, 5 weeks out from Portugal, they will get a lot more attention because it's their focus meet, and that's their meet that they're going to swim their lifetime bests. So what we try to do, or what I try to do as we move through the season, is make sure that whenever somebody is coming up to a meet that is important for them, they get a little bit more. They get a little bit more of my time, a little bit more of my attention. There are weeks in the year when Danielle comes in and she gets input, but a lot less than she would normally get. Like tomorrow, we have Ella and Evan who are just outside qualifying times for trials. So in the last 10 days, they've got a lot more attention than Danielle and Connor because they're racing tomorrow. And to meet that they want to produce a lifetime best at. And Danielle and Connor just have to accept that. They're part of a team, they're part of a group. And all right, it's a smaller group, but they're still part of a team. And I know that they wouldn't really want me to ignore the rest of the group to their benefit, because it would just dismantle the whole Team Lauren thing. It would just mean the whole thing was nonsense. So I try to spread my workload a little bit across the year so that everybody gets what they need at the time that they need it. The frantic bit is the summer when everybody's going to two different or three different meets in the summer. And then, to be honest with you, it is just a bit frantic. It's a bit mad. But we've got two hands and three stopwatches and we can just get on with it, like, you know.
For younger athletes coming through the system with high performance potential, what can parents and coaches do locally to support these athletes on their sporting journey? Especially, I think, when it comes to keeping them in the sport, like you mentioned there that Danielle and Connor are, you know, early 20s and, you know, you hope to keep them in the sport for much longer. But let's look at right back to the really younger athletes that are coming through and have high performance potential.
I actually was talking about this the other week, the another coach, and I'm kind of torn on it. Right? I'm kind of torn on whether or not swimming is an early specialization sport or not. And I think some of it depends on gender and some of it depends on the athlete. I think if we're talking about 8, 9, 10-year-olds, it's really, really important that those guys get the opportunity to play lots of sport. They get to do lots of things. Apart from anything else, it improves their spatial awareness and improves their coordination. It improves their athleticism, because whether I like to admit it or not, swimming doesn't tend to improve your athleticism. You're in a suspended fluid. You're suspended in a fluid. You need to be doing some load bearing. So all those other sports really do help. So when they turn 13 for girls, I think girls need to do more. I think girls need to be doing more swimming. They need to be doing more skill development work at that younger age, and they need to be in the water. Their parents need to understand that they're going to be doing a lot of stuff. So maybe drop back a little bit on hockey, if that's the other sport, or on netball, if they choose to do swimming. Be supportive of the fact that there are early mornings, you know. So I would say to all parents that if you're getting involved in swimming, I love swimming, right? I hope it comes across that I love swimming. But if your kid's going to be involved in swimming, you're not getting Lions. You're not getting summer holidays. You know, it's a 52 weeks of the year sort of gig. That's hard. Don't go into it blind thinking, they'll swim some school term. It doesn't work that way. So you've got to accept that. You've got to be up for that challenge. The positives, though, far outweigh it, because the ability that they gain to segment their life and to be organized, because they have to be organized, carries forward into so many other things. You know, how many swimmers are in university doing really well in degrees and swimming through it because they can do those things? With boys, I think, are a little bit different. I don't think boys have to really specialize until maybe they're 15 or 16, because I think physiologically they have a second window of opportunity where they can pick up new skills. Like, they still have to be doing stuff. They still have to be in the water swimming 4 or 5 times a week. When they turn 15 or 16, they got to make a commitment. In Ireland, we think if someone hasn't made it by the time they're 15, forget about it. And it's just wrong. I mean, like I said earlier on, Danielle and Connor, I would expect to be competitive into their late 20s, because that's where the world is moving. That's where the swimming world is moving with these athletes. We have to be, as coaches and as clubs, prepared to let athletes develop at their own rate. And just because Danielle didn't qualify for EYOF, so she didn't make it onto that first opportunity. And when she went to European Juniors, she swam European Juniors for 3 times and didn't get a second swim until the third one. So she was swimming heats in the morning and not swimming semifinals until the last one. And then she made the final in the 100 back. Just because you haven't made it at that 15 age group, trust the process, trust the coach, and every year just add a little bit more to your program, a little bit of something different, and enjoy what you're doing. That's the most important thing. You got to enjoy what you're doing. Find some way, whether that's bum bombs on backstroke, or whether it's doing backflips into the pool at the end, or whether we do we play rats and rabbits, right, with our senior guys. And I don't know if you know what rats and rabbits is. We have them lined up across the pool facing each other. We can't do it now. We're lined up across the pool facing each other. Facing out, feet together. One team's rats, one team's rabbits. And when I shout rats, the rats have to chase the rabbits to the wall. But they got to turn and race. So they have to swim very, very fast, or they're going to get caught. So we're making their fast twitch muscle fibers work. We're making them sprint but they're having a laugh, you know, they're enjoying themselves, and they're there's a little bit of competition. So finding things that may seem really stupid just to make it fun.
We're nearly at the end of our chat today, Peter. One more question before I get to the final one. Your top tip for working with senior athletes specifically?
Don't like I said earlier on, don't be afraid to fail. Failing is part of the journey, and don't be afraid of having your athletes challenge you on a daily basis. So Danielle and Connor forced me to be a better coach. You know, they asked me questions that if I don't know the answer to, I have to find out. So they forced me to be better. Know your sport, but don't shy away from being challenged, and don't shy away from failing. Failing is not the end. It's just a step to the next stage, and then take time to earn some respect and trust.
And our final question today is, I'd love to know, what is your favorite swimming moment?
From a coaching point of view that I was personally involved in, Danielle's 50 backstroke at the last long course summer meet. It was 2027 something. And it runs a close run with that and her 5300 freestyle. So two swims that sort of rewrote Irish history. In terms of watching just swimming generally, I would have to say Adrian Moorhouse winning the 100 breaststroke by that much.
Two fantastic moments really there. Thank you so much, Peter, for your time. Yeah. Best of luck over the coming weeks, and best of luck to Danielle and Connor and all of the crew at Larne Swimming Club when the season does get underway, hopefully sooner than later. I'm sure we'll all be watching out to see how you get on. Thanks everyone for tuning in to the show today. Be sure to follow all the action across the Swim Ireland social platforms at Swim Ireland across Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. Until next time, stay safe and thanks for tuning in.